Ladies and gentlemen, just before we start our service for Molly, if you have a mobile phone, if I could just ask you, if you just pop that on silent, we'll turn it off. Is that the moment or is it the leading time? We'll go on. Good afternoon and welcome. I would like to thank you for joining us today as we celebrate the life of Walter Andrew Goswell Sparrow. During today's service, I will refer to Walter as Wally, as he was known and loved by you all, and I do this with the utmost respect. We have Simon Foxhall and Dean Gregory of Glen Elm Funerals, and it is our privilege and our honour to be conducting this funeral service today on behalf of Wally's family. In our thoughts today, we would like to acknowledge those families and friends that may not be here in person, but who are here in spirit and in your hearts. Wally was a devoted husband to Jenny, father-in-law to Tanya and Mark, Ben and Heather, Sharon and Shane. Grandfather to Renee, Brittany, Marcus, Hayden, Harrison and Jasmine. He was a brother, a brother-in-law, uncle and a true friend. To commence the service today, I'd like to send a short message to Wally on behalf of you all. Wally, thank you for enriching our lives and for loving us without favour. Your love will be greatly missed. And the humble man he was, he would say thank you and is now resting peacefully. In a number of ways, death, it unites us all. And Wally's death for a time, it demands that each of us put aside our toil, our cares, our business and our pleasure to unite ourselves with everybody else here. Fellow mourners who share in a common bond of love and respect to Wally. It is a time like this that we stop the anguish of life. We pause for a while and reflect. And when we think of Wally's life, there's quite a lot to reflect upon. Now we can all honestly say, Wally, he was a unique character. And today, you will recall the experience and the relationship that you shared with Wally. Now as we celebrate his life today, we can take satisfaction that Wally has been and still is a part of your life. His influence, it endures and it will continue to endure. And your unending consequences flowing from his character and from his deeds. Now Wally's family and friends have lovingly paid tribute to, which we will now share with you. Firstly, I'd like to invite Ben forward, Wally's son.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ben Sparrow, son of Wally. Thank you very much for attending today in such great numbers. There are people who have travelled from across the state, from across the country, and we really appreciate the effort that you put into being with us here today. Dad would love to have seen this. So where do I begin telling you about the life of Walter and Goswell Sparrow? It's been recognised by many of you over the past 2 weeks. And by the man himself, or past, he had an interesting life. to the extent that he had a project underway this past year to document his story. And here it is. So, it's a pretty big book. And I think he got up to age 8. But he loved researching his family history, and thanks to the work he did on his ancestors, and now part of his life in recording that, we've got some great information to look back on. But Walter Andrew Cosby Sparrow was born in Goulburn, New South Wales, on the 22nd of November 1942. He was the first child of Captain Walter Charles Sparrow. So he was the third generation of Walter Sparrow, and Joan Patricia Sparrow, and Henry. Wally was later joined in life by brother Charles Stephen in 1949, and sister Susan Mary in 1950. The middle name Andrew was after his uncle Andrew, who was killed in the Lancaster crash in Belgium in World War II. The peculiar name of Boswell was the surname of his father's best mate in World War II. He reckons he was born 9 months and 2 days after his father arrived back from World War II to Australia. Although christened those initials WAGS, many of you would have heard him try to convince you that his full name was Walter Andrew Goswell Franz Patrick Carmichael Aloysius Sparrow. I was never completely sure myself, but he said he had to carry two driver's licenses to cover his full name. You would quickly realise he was either playing with you or his parents were drunk when they christened him. Many of Wally's early years were spent with his grandparents on his mother's side, growing up on a dairy farm outside of Fulton Cove on the Hunter River in Newcastle, New South Wales. There he grew to love animals, learned to ride horses, milk cows, and spent many days exploring the countryside. They always had vegetable garden, chickens, an adequate supply of milk and cream, mushroom crops in the surrounding paddocks, and fish from the river, and plenty of rabbits to satisfy their nutritional needs. He consumed every conceived rabbit recipe and many had to be discovered. These days had a big influence on his life as he went on to study at Telston Agricultural High School and Hawkesbury Agricultural College. His grandmother also played a brilliant piano, and they spent many happy hours together with her playing and Wally singing. This was probably the beginning of the music in his life. His first school was a two-room property at Williamtown, Newcastle, next to the Air Force Base. And this exposure ignited another passion of his, old aircraft. Wally's mother and father moved to Eastwood in the suburbs of Sydney when he was about 9 or 10. The young boy brought up in a dairy farm was nearly amongst the city slickers. He was the apparent bushy in town. And one of the first things he had to do, learn to do, was to fight. He was accepted after a while and after a few fights, but he never changed his appearance or lifestyle. But in doing so, he was driven home by the police in the sidecar several times and presented to his mother. A big turning point in Wally's life was the passing of his father when he was 11. He fast became the man of the house. His mother worked during the day in a grocery shop in Eastwood, and at night time as a barmaid in the Eastwood Hotel. Wally's job was to care for his brother Charlie and his sister Sue, ensure that there was cooked food on the table for them and his mother when she returned from work. He was heading into his high school years, and it was about that time his mother enrolled him in the first Mansfield Boys Scouts group. This experience really helped to develop his personality. He also became a member of the local Junior Farmers Club at Epping. So at this stage, he had plenty of interest to keep him from getting out of trouble. Or so one would think. I think we all know Wally well enough to think differently. With his love for land and the Junior Farmers Club right up his alley, his specialty was livestock judging. He used to go to major shows, entering in judging competitions covering dairy and beef cattle and draft horses. So I'm sure this was his grounding to face all those poor, unsuspecting country music talent show entrants in the future. Eastwood had a lot of open and poorly fenced country around it, and he used to round up and claim all the stray horses and keep them in a local paddock. He never had a saddle in the early days, just a homemade bridle. But he always had a horse to ride. His love for horses continued well into his later years. Actually, when the Gill Brothers Circus and Rodeo came to town, they were quite surprised when a skinny, poorly dressed young local boy turned out to be the local buckjump champion. Wally was a great entrepreneur as well as a young boy. He would collect, not deliver, newspapers in the neighbourhood, pack them into bundles, and string them, and sell them off to the local butcher. He collected old bicycles and bicycle parts from the dump, rebuilt them, and sold them. He also had a business selling fresh fruit, picked from the local neighbourhood trees. selling the odd horse that he rounded up as a stray. But he was also, his grandparents' farm was just down the road from the Royal Newcastle Golf Club, where he would ride the horse down early in the morning, hunt around for all the lost golf balls and sell them to the players. And then earn some money as a cabbie as well, a cabbie. So Wally's first radio was a crystal set. He spent many hours lying in bed listening to that machine, especially in anticipation of the one program, the Smokey Dawson Show. He didn't recall ever missing it. Smokey's ability to save the day with his gunfighting and whip-cracking skills made him Wally's hero. He was from an early age a junior deputy, obeying codes of the West, along with the millions of other Australians. An added ability of Smokey's, though, was he could also sing, and it was country music. His other early exposure to country music was when somebody gave him a wind-up gramophone and some old LP records, including Slim Women. But Smokey's roadshow came to town in Eastwood one day, and there was no way Wally was going to miss it. He went along with his mate, Smithy. Smokey was on stage, he was singing, he was whip-cracking, knife-throwing, when suddenly an announcement was made that somebody had stolen Smokey's 6 guns from the back of his trailer. Wally and Smithy knew their way around the area and figured the culprits may have scraped by a large underground drain that ran under the railway station. They jumped on their bicycles and arrived on the other side of the tunnel just as the culprits were exiting. With a great deal of bravado, they pounced on the thieves and won the fight. Wally and Smithy took the guns to Smokey, and they became the town heroes. Smokey let one proud little boy ride around his horse Flash for the rest of the evening, which was the best place for him because Wally had torn the seat out of his pants during the fight. and coming from a poor household, he had no underpants on. Smokey asked Wally to write him a letter, and he did. Dad received a wonderful reply, which sits out the front here today. In reply to Wally's question, Smokey said, "If you want to become a country singer, and you try hard enough, you will succeed." Dad passed on this advice to many of the young musicians he worked with over the years. Smokey also mentioned in his reply that he'd written a new song, "The Kid with the Rip in His Pants." Wally remained in touch with Smokey and became great friends with he and his wife Doc's, catching up every time he went to Sydney and, of course, in Tamworth. Doc would answer when Dad called Smokey for his birthday and yell, "Smokey, it's the kid with the rip in his pants on the phone." Wally, over many years, put together the most complete set of sheep-drenching guns in Australia. When he retired, he found a home for the Stockman's Hall of Fame in Longreach, Queensland. He visited one day to sign them over and had a look around the museum. Sitting in the Smokey Dawson exhibit were the same 6 guns he had rescued from the Smokey all those years ago. Wally was blessed with the support of the Legacy organisation during his youth, and he was always grateful for that. And we thank everybody for your support of Legacy here today. But the second marriage of Wally's mother took the family to Queensland after he had left home. But it's possibly that move that introduced him to the famous Bundaberg Rum. Wally's 21st birthday was actually the date of JFK's assassination. although with the time difference, I'm pretty sure that was nursing a sore head by that stage from having a future too many celebrating his own birthday. But nobody really taught Wally how to play the guitar. And he learned by ear at Hall Street Agricultural College. The first song he learned was Black Water of My Heart by David Thompson. A year later, he was in a country band. My dig at him was always that he never learned the basic chord of G. Somehow he got away with all those years just playing G7 instead. But he developed a career in the agricultural chemical business as a sales rep with the Dow, Hertz, and other legacies of Hertz. But by 1966, he was cleaning cattle dips and selling herbicides by day and singing at the weekends in clubs and motels, on radio and TV, and even in hospitals, and in Johnny Cash style in prisons. But while other people played golf on the weekend, Wally sang. He loved to entertain people. He sang for the love of it. The entertainment experience rubbed off on his work during the week as it gave him the ability to meet and mix easily with people, fluently address large groups, and through public exposure, his clients recognised him and remembered him. It wasn't uncommon for customers to greet him with, "Haven't I seen you on television?" Or, "Remember me? I sat in the third row from the front last month. The fellow in the jeans, it was a great show." The other side of this was he'd get ex-prisoners stopping him on the street saying the same thing. I found a quote from Wally from the 1970s. He said, "I once met a man who told me that few people ever find an occupation or interest that brings them complete happiness. I feel I was one of the lucky ones because through my work and through entertaining, I've reached this goal." In 1966, he was spotted by a talent scout who asked him to work up a solo act. This built him as a country singer, guitarist, compere, and comedian. Looking through his scrapbook of newspaper clippings, you can see he compared and performed on stage with many of Australia's music legends, from Johnny O'Keefe to Johnny Farmer. From the mid-1980s, Wally began adding to this to his country resume. A songwriter, recording artist, promoter, journalist, adjudicator, trainer, and broadcaster. He started sharing his thoughts and gossip around country music through a weekly column in the Stock Journal. After going through a few changes to the name for this column, settled as Sparrow's Nest. He wrote in a similar manner for Capital News and other newsletters and publications. Around the same time he started writing, he took an interest in photography. This never got overly serious, but he did capture some of the history of country music in the country and many great shots of the Australian landscape as he travelled around. He discovered Tamworth in the mid-1990s and quickly became part of the furniture. He was really in his element. It was the one week of the year when all his connections through performing, recording, journalism, mentoring, etc. all came together. He was inducted into the Tamworth Hands of Fame in 2008, alongside his friends Warren H. William and Kevin Knapp. While he was a judge for Tamworth's Golden Guitar Awards for 9 years, the ARIAs, the CMT Awards, and a multitude of other talent quests across Australia. His regular radio appearances as a journalist started in the early 1990s as a country music gossip guru on the shows of Dave Pryor and Max Gornberg. His early interest in radio and the fact that he had the history of Australian and American country music sitting around the house in the form of thousands of CDs, perked his interest in taking over the Country Greggy radio program on Radio Adelaide. He never took a course on paneling, but just as the same as he learned to play the guitar, he learned his own style of paneling and presenting. He almost clocked up 13 years presenting 3 hours of country music most Saturday mornings on radio. He would spend hours preparing his program, and he loved doing it. I would set him up with quicker ways to prepare the program, but he always took the long way, because he loved the music. And he loved sharing it with listeners. As Tamworth and other festivals started to become a little harder to reach, the radio program gave him the reason, the means to keep in touch with the industry. As a recording artist, he released 3 albums, A Night in Sparrow Country, Thunderbird Run Love Songs and Legends, and Well Truly Sparrow, all produced by Peter Miller. A Night in Sparrow Country was recorded in the lounge room of his home, but in a way that captured the feeling of one of Wally's live shows. Songs played into each other in brackets, one after the other, and you can always hear the panic in his voice as he's saying, "You saw me coming home from school, running across the front lawn, about to blast through the front door," as he was finishing the end of one of those four-song brackets. Luckily, Mum just caught me in time. Songwriting was a skill he developed over time, peaking in the 1980s and first half of the 90s. Some of these he recorded in his second and third albums, including Country Lady, which is a song written about and dedicated to his younger sister, Sue. But he was probably most famous for his songs about Bundaberg Run. The lines, "I can feel a Bundy coming on," and "I don't drink beer, mate, I drink Bundaberg Run," stuck with him wherever he went. He was the state representative for the Tamworth Songwriters Association and even had a talent for songwriting live on the stage during performances, particularly for people with birthdays in the audience. An album he did write but never recorded formally was one purely with songs about the history of Kangaroo Island. The amazing stories of KR was a topic that really captured his interest, and he researched quite a lot through reading and gathering stories from locals. He loved his fishing. His favourite holiday destination was Port Hughes. But Uncle Fred Munzer reminded me the other day of a story when they took off a Fisherman's Bay and motored along for a while to short distance. Sorry, Uncle Fred, that was slightly long. But they ended up just tying the boat to the end of the Port Portland jetty and went to the pub. Jumped in the back of the boat after a few drinks, maybe talked the local fishermen into selling them a couple of fish, and told everyone back on the shore, "Nah, the fish weren't biting today." But whether it was selling agricultural chemicals or heading to the next country show, Wally loved to be on the road around Australia. Something he found difficult once he had retired, was staying in one spot for too long. So he found some part-time work with a pest control company that filled that void. There was that slight overlap with the old ag chemical career, and plenty of overlap with their sales, rep skills, and to make this a really enjoyable extension of his working life. His time on the road, though, did see him sharing rooms with colleagues, and anyone who slept anywhere within a mile of Wally noticed that he was a prolific snorer. It wasn't uncommon for colleagues to give up, grab their blanket, and sleep outside of the balcony in the middle of winter. But after a little pushing, one day he decided he was going to see Nashville. He developed some contacts before going and spent a couple of months travelling around Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, and Missouri. One of his favourite bars was on the corner was on the border of Kentucky and West Virginia. He said if you didn't have a gun on you when you walked in, they gave you one just to even up the score. Nashville was everything he hoped for. He had the honour of performing in Nashville's most famous bar, Tootsie's. He watched the Grand Ole Opry one night from backstage and had the opportunity to stand at the famous edition with the microphone and the circle in the middle of the stage where anyone in country music has performed. He also got to see Graceland, but the greatest thrill for him was actually finding Elvis's birthplace. During this couple of months, he took his guitar into radio stations, newspapers, and local schools to perform songs about Australia and to warn them about drop bears. He must have made a strong impression because the governor of Tennessee bestowed him with the title of Tennessee Ambassador of Goodwill. He was quite possibly the only person in Australia with that title. A stuffed moose dog caught Wally's eye on his first trip to Canada, and he adopted it, naming it the Moose Warrior. The Moose Warrior travelled across Australia and the world to the most unusual places, with pictures taken of him as a record. That was part of Wally's endearing dry sense of humour. Third time he went to the USA, in typical Wally style, he wore thongs on the plane And when he had to unboard and reboard the same plane in LA, he woke up and couldn't find his thongs. He ended up walking through security in those shoes to the amusement of the LA airport security officers. Of course, he would have milked the moment for all it was worth. Wally made a significant contribution to the administration of country music in Australia. In 1993, he was appointed to the steering committee, which established the South Australian Council for Country Music. He was passionate about creating a pathway of opportunities for the next generation of country musicians in South Australia. He served as secretary for many years to contribute to this vision. He was also a professional member of the CMAA. He loved to cause mischief. One day, he saw a commercial on TV that called an idiot a lolly. Tongue firmly in cheek, he sent a letter to the editor of the advertiser to make a statement. The lollies of the world were tired of the ridicule directed towards them. In the ensuing days, other lollies came to the surface in support. Then the Bruce started crying as well. Being from New South Wales and Queensland, Australian rules football was something foreign, but he soon learned that he better develop a liking for it upon arriving in South Australia. Port Adelaide became his beloved team. Early on, he was laughing around the bar of the Port Adelaide Football Club, a Russell Weaver joke that he didn't quite check in, that he didn't quite get, and he asked, "Who the hell is Russell Weaver?" There was a dead silence as a tall man walked up over behind him, put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Hi. I'm They got to know each other from then and Wally performed in the club quite often. Another couple of sports he had to learn were cricket and soccer. He got bored of just watching kids cricket, so he learned how to score, which he did every Saturday for a good 8 years. Every dad has to run the line at soccer at some stage, but I don't recommend doing it in RM's boots. He tried to kick the ball back in the play one day wearing RM's. And using one of his phrases, "You feel arse over tit." His final full day in this world was spent attending a meeting of the Eddie Lou Harris Appreciation Society, otherwise known as a good excuse for a casual lunch, a bottle of red wine, and good company. But he would have been pretty happy with wrapping up an innings 2 days short of his 75th birthday in that manner. Well, Dad, what a life you lived. Love your country music, you love your agriculture, your fishing, your animals, you love a good Portsmouth College reunion, you love your gag, you love your RMs, you love a good red, and of course you love a Bundy, lots of ice and coke. Or it's actually maximated this. But most of all, you loved your family and your friends, and we loved you. Thank you.
Intelligent. We'll never meet this life again. He was his own person. He was a polymath, knew a lot about many things, and combined that knowledge with a knack for having fun. To me, Wally appeared to have been born in a country called Never a Dull Moment, and he lived there all his life, cracking jokes, drinking funny rum, and making people happy to be around him. I first got to know Wally along with my friend Johnny, of the Edmund and Harris Appreciation Society, through his epic country breaking program here in Rainy Valley, and we were taken by his easygoing nature and monumental knowledge of country music and the people he played it. And Wally was one of those people to lit up your life. And interesting to Ben in the sense about how he taught himself to play guitar, taught himself this, taught himself that. He was so ready. And I used to love when things went wrong. I went to the NBC when we had a team of people, we'd call it, help, help, Wally, and only Wally. And he did an amazing job. And I think he was one of the best creative presenters I've ever heard. He had brilliant writing. He was a natural. I'm a bit jealous of him because he could do so many things. And as I say, he lit up your life. Not everyone is that lucky to meet people like Wally. Some of us have to be the batteries that allow the torches to shine. John, you light up my life. And I think you will Wally be another
It was actually Wally's recommendation that I started listening to country breaking pretty much near the start. Every Saturday morning, at Sparrow's Bar, I'd get out of bed, make a cup of tea and a piece of toast, and head out to the shed and crank up the volume for 3 hours of the best in country music. The first time I met Wally was actually at a country concert at the Norwood Town Hall. I walked in, Wally was on the door taking tickets. He looked up my name and said, "Oh, look mate, you're a VIP, you must be important." And I said, "Absolutely am. I've had to phone into your radio show to win these tickets." A bit later, Bobby mentioned that he might be interested in doing a bit of volunteering on Radio Adelaide. So I said, "All right, yeah, let's call up Wally and organise lunch, he'll tell us what to do." And that is how the Emmylou Harris Appreciation Society was born. Every few months for the past decade, especially in November 22nd, we'd all get together to suggest songs to each other, try a little bit of red wine, and quite regularly make a few dozen oysters disappear. There were never more than three of us, but Wally used to tell the country breaking listeners that we'd booked out restaurants. So no one could vote if we didn't want to come along and join us. That was Wally's magic. He could turn a simple lunch into a legend. On radio, Wally was larger than life. His voice would reach out to warm the hearts of friends and fans and listeners around the state and around the world. He built a special community out of his love of country music, and he always drew us in on the joke when things would start up while he was on the air. Every week, Wally would sign off country breaking with the words, "God willing, I'll be back here in 2 weeks." Except for his final show on November the 18th. So God obviously wanted Wally for a party in heaven, where I hope he is now singing love songs, playing guitar, and sharing a jug with Jesus. As for the rest of us, we'll wake up on Saturday morning with no rally to hold our hearts that doesn't hurt. But that sadness is not just about what we've lost, it's about how much Wally gave us.
Fred's they actually believed us. We thought about that. I think they actually meant Wally. And but he never forgot the other people wanted to make the runway, whatever it was. He kept on winning the People's Choice Awards as a radio presenter. He loved people. People loved him there. He lived a large life, channeled all good times and bad times. He's had to work in show business. I could do a good job of all he wants. I have been like the comedian, nightclub singer, recruiter, salesman. They all eventually came together. As Ben says, he started on his life story. He done it to about age 8 and paid $700. It was going to be called Wally in Peace. not even going to mention the politically incorrect war, who if you listen to a radio as a Frankish man, you'd have heard more. And if I turned down on ABC, I'd be arrested and fly along at the same time. Then he was so very proud of you. He used to talk about you all the time. Yeah? And he talked to everybody, his whole family, Charlie, Jane. And the many characters who walked on Wally's really big stage. Farewell, Wally. There really will never be another you. Bye-bye.
Right on again. things who are going to miss you heaps, Bobby. Thank you for being the older brother I never had. You're a great mate, one I am very honoured to have had the pleasure of knowing.
Sunday you'll be blue.
We can't die without ever really going away. still there. It's in this room today. All the memories are still there. You live on in the hearts of those you've touched and you've nurtured whilst you were here. Death, it may end a life, but not a relationship. And just before we leave this chapel today, let us also remember that Wally, as a human being, he was composed of the same mixture of inspiration and error, strength and weakness, laughter and sorrow as the rest of the human race. For all the good and kind things he accomplished during his time with us, we give our grateful thanks. And for any mistakes, we offer our forgiveness. But above all, let us keep him in your hearts and in your mind without regret. Now this does come to the end of our service for Wally. In a short moment, I will invite the family to come forward to pay their final respects to Wally by way of a formal tribute. And then, ladies and gentlemen, you're more than welcome to come and do the same. If I could just ask if you could come down the aisle to your left, come forward, and we do have some rose petals that you're more than welcome to come forward and say your own private farewells and scaffold on Wally's coffin. And then we'll lead up to this door to my left, into the lounge area. Well, there'll be an opportunity there to have a tea, coffee and a biscuit and continue that celebration of Wally's life in a more relaxed manner. You'll notice in that area there is a memorial book. If you haven't signed that, please do so, as it's a wonderful keepsake for the family. Also, if there is anyone who would like to make a donation, the donations go to Legacy today. As we leave the chapel, we're going to listen to a very special piece of music that's been chosen by the family. But as I say in closing, don't be afraid to laugh, because it's a sign of happy memories that you haven't won. Thank you. Yeah.